Callington Castle, Learning to Love the Truth by R.A. Feller. This book is dedicated to those who love to go on quests for the truth and thoroughly enjoy the journey along the way. Chapter 1. The winds whoosh and the spirits dance about in the air, saying,
"We seek refuge with conquering thoughts.
For us to find a place that we might dwell, to live and breathe by single darkened choice. Only to be found amongst the free will of a soul, within the entrance of the minds of man."
The hooves thrash through the bright yellow grass that glisten in the light of the sun. It is autumn, and the cool air is felt beneath the armor of the men who ride with their king. We find Prince Liam riding by his father's side. It is not the sounds of the onslaught of the enemy. They do not bother him. But something from within. A single thought causes Liam to see that it is not his purpose to kill anymore. War does not seem to be a part of who he now is. And yet another thought tells him, perhaps truly, there is a better way. He has to find out. Although well trained for battle, the inner voice continues. He hears it over and over as it tells him this is not to be his destiny. Just before the king's army engages in combat, Liam shouts out, "Father, I take leave!" Liam then breaks from the ranks and turns back. Other thoughts invade Liam's mind as he turns. "Where are you going? The men need your leadership." He rides on. "You'll never be able to face your father again. Some may die because of this selfish choice." And then a final thought is a resounding blow and attempts to invade his mind. "They'll call you a coward." Unmoved, Liam continues to ride away. He has been in battles before. The stories and the glories of war have been drummed into his mind since youth. But has it become a sound that would drown out all the other growth from his life as well? There was an incomplete image in his mind, a missing thread or two, as it were, which kept him from seeing the whole design of the pattern. Or are these other threads that now have his focus, an even more vital part of the design that he had once thought, threads that were needed to support the fabric of his reality more fully? Liam breaks out in a sweat as he lets loose on the reins. His horse begins to trot
just
as he leaves the line. As he is making peace with his decision, he feels a burning sensation. Struck by an arrow, Prince Liam experiences a deep, penetrating pain and begins to fall from the side of his horse. "Ah!" I abruptly awake and find myself sitting up, taking quick, heavy breaths. My room slowly comes into focus, and as I adjust to my usual surroundings, my reality starts to shift. This has been the third time I have had this dream. I am no stranger to battle, but the thought of not being able to fight against this nightmare has been most disturbing. Slipping out of my bed, my feet touch the wet, sobering floor. I go to my window to try and change the mood that I am in. It is early in the morn, and the stars still hang there, piercing the veil of a dark sky. The smooth stones beneath my feet have now become uncomfortably damp, so I put on some shoes and venture out of my chamber to the dimly torch-lit corridors. Finally, with my dream still haunting me, I make my way to my brother Edward's room and knock upon his door. While I wait, I wonder if I'm doing the right thing in coming to him. But I must confess that he has been the more stable of the two of us these past days. Our father's unpredictable behavior has grown increasingly worse, and being the eldest, I have taken the brunt of it, which has been most draining. I go to knock a second time. Edward opens suddenly, and I jump back with surprise, which surprises him. Now we are both very much awake. Edward finds me holding my right hand in a loose fist up to my heart, and my breaths are yet heavy, as I'm now slouched in a slightly forward position. "Liam, is everything all right?" "Yes, at least I think. I'm not so sure. You'd better come in." We sit down on his bed, and then I tell him of my dream. "Have you told this to anyone else?" "Nowhere else to go, now that the priests have gone. Ever since Father has taken up that cup, drinking till his eyes are red, and now he has become a wild animal lately, hasn't he? And I know peace has been difficult to find, Liam, especially with his now unruly fits and uncontrollable rage. Before the priest left, I am under the impression they thought he had an evil spirit. Now, the deeper the pit, the longer the Great One's arm is able to reach into it." "Well spoken, Edward. We must beware about harboring resentments during these times, or things might get rather confusing." There is a long pause before my brother's reply, which leads me to believe he is keeping a secret. Then Edward continues, "I've heard that the priests are in waiting. They pray day and night for the appointed time of the deliverer. Who is this deliverer to be?" "Father's drinking really has gotten to you, my poor brother." Edward pauses as if he thinks he may have offended me. But after he sees I do not react, brother feels compelled to continue. "I think he's gotten to us all, Liam. No one can get very close to him anymore. Tell me more of our deliverer. I need to hear it, particularly at times like these." "Well, no one knows when he is to come. But my hope is, at the appointed time, he'll bring back purity to the people and restore the kingdom with his priestly words and actions. Boy, I'd sure like to meet him. Why, I'd even settle for a priest right now just to find out what my dream means." "The fact that you are in line for the throne and have had the exact same dream 3 times in a row could mean the Great One is not only trying to tell you, but have a message for all our people as well. I will break my silence. I believe our queen and mother knows where the priests are. Now, how do you know all this, and I do not? I happened by at the time of their departure, and I heard parts from conversation of the priests of the order. Where they're staying, I do not know, but I did hear she could send them prayer requests, and something about taking courage, for the Great One is able to see you through all adversity, work all things out for good for those who love him, and to take heart, for they'd be praying for her. I wish I could have been there. If only there was something I could have done to stop this." "Like what? You know it is not your time to rule. Sad but true." The birds begin to chirp out in the garden, and Edward suddenly comes to the realization, "Hey, it'll be morning soon." And then I realize it too, as we say together, "Mother always prays at the dais at sunrise. I will go to her and tell her of my quest to find out the meaning of my dream. Don't forget to get dressed first and let me know what happens." I take leave of my brother with great excitement as my heart soars, my thoughts begin to race, and then the reality of what is happening starts to sink in. I know I must be calm to think clearly, as there is no telling what will unfold before me. Do I go back to sleep? No, I'll only bounce out of bed. Let me get dressed for travel and go to meet my mother in prayer at morn. It is still before sunrise, and all is quiet as a fine summer's haze fills the night air, signifying yet another uncomfortably humid day. I come to a pause momentarily by the frog pond in the courtyard, as the moon shines down upon the water amongst the lilies. But then my focus shifts, as the moon also gives light upon the many steps throughout the entranceway of the great hall. Beams of moonlight come through the castle windows, and as I enter the hall, the sounds of the croaking frogs now fade away. Meeting with Mother in prayer at morn now has my full attention. I pass through the moonbeams and come to the opening of a long corridor where torches now light the way. For some reason, memories from my past, thoughts that I hadn't had in years, come to the surface of my mind as I continue to walk. I recall that at age 5, how my mother's growing belly told me that I was not going to be an only child anymore. After my 6th birthday, Mother gave birth to Edward. I was excited about having a younger brother from the start. Later on, when I saw how much attention he was getting, I wasn't so sure anymore. I approach some long, smooth stone steps that meet with the wall as they curve to where they begin their ascension. More thoughts come. I remember when I realized that the attention my brother was getting was no fault of his own. I was able to draw closer to him after this. I watched as my brother grew from babe unto child, and then from boy into man. I wondered, what was this friendly little fellow going to become? And watching him made me forget that I was getting older too. Then, all at once, it hit me. By divine right, I was next in line for the throne. I knew it in the back of my mind, really. But why me and not Edward? I was glad that the Great One had ordained it this way. Great One? Priests? Oh my mother's throne! I marvel at how easily I become sidetracked from my own present focus. But whose spirit will truly keep me at peace? Then I remember the facts of what I've been taught, and weigh them against the way all things are coming apart lately. I'm just not so sure of what to believe anymore. The steps are large and wide beneath my feet. There are several high windows set within the walls that curve with the many steps, and as I climb the stairs, moonbeams mix with the haze of the heavy summer air, as the illumination from the torches hanging on the wall add to the heat. Beads of sweat now roll down my face, but I pay no mind to their discomfort as I near my destination. As I continue up the steps, oddly enough, more thoughts come to my mind. First of my father, who was busy running the kingdom, which at one time he did so well. Everybody liked him, for he was fair with everyone. He stood for what was right. He was known for his faith and as a man of principle, uncommon to his now present nature, which I noticed upon his return from his trip. Now he ruled with drink. The golden goblet had become commonplace in his hand. How distant we've all become, as I've noticed he has also become with his subjects as well. And although I search, I can no longer find a place within his life. This causes me to bear a pain of my own, along with many of his subjects. Why, weeks have gone by without even a word from him. There was no time for family, only the cordial, royal doldrums of the roles we played. Turning to prayer lately, I've learned that I must be more patient with my father. Perhaps the Great One will reveal to me what must be done in this situation. I must wait upon him, and then the timing will be right for me to act. Due to my inadequate amount of sleep this night, I become drowsy as I continue to walk up the stairs, and have thoughts about stopping for a rest. No, I must go on. I must push all these thoughts out of my mind. But when I do, others take their place. What am I to do about the family situation? I hated what was becoming of things. My father continues to drain the life out of everyone, especially my poor mother. And yet I watched him with my brother, how he held him as a child. Hadn't he held me when I was 2 or 3? Rock me in his arms, bounce me on his knee, and speak softly to me with the love of his heart? Then there were the hunting trips, Edward's first ride upon a horse, with all of us. It was his arrow that landed the deer that day. How we all laughed as it roasted. We were so proud, so joyously close then, my father and brother. But where was I? It was so long ago. If it had not been for Edward, I would have been isolated as if I were in jail. He sensed a secret, but out of respect he'd never ask. Why all these thoughts, and why am I so sluggish on these stairs? Am I under a spell or in a dream? I remember a conversation that Edward and I had, what we would look for in a bride. We would have fun telling of whom the Great One would bring into our lives. One time I had caught 2 servants embraced in a kiss. I looked away, but evidently the thought stayed with me. For when I was at a feast, my eyes caught sight of that of a young maiden, a daughter of a nobleman, and her eyes were looking back at mine. We drew near, and then closer still, my lips were drawn to hers like a moth to a flame. Then suddenly turning her head, she said, "You don't understand love the same way that I do." But I'm not really like this. I only copied from what I saw my servants doing.
I like your honesty, but you should not practice what you do not understand.
Then whatever it is leaves me, as I hear the sound of voices that seem to clear my mind. I'm found to be more unmoved from my intent now that my motion is steady and upward. On my ascension, my focus has returned, and this time with a sense of urgency. My footsteps do not seem to be quite quick enough, as I find my exhilaration quickly turned to fatigue, also from lack of sleep. I round the turn and then finally wipe the sweat from my brow as the voices grow exceedingly louder and angry. And then things get too quiet, as the calm before the storm. I then hear them again. It is my father, the king, and Queen Mother speaking from her royal worth.
Henry, you don't look so good. Have you been up all night drinking?
My father's impatient voice was that of wine talking.
I'm sick and tired of your meddlesome advice, which I, like a fool, always take. But no more. Because of you, we might be at war again. Now where's my pretty golden goblet?
I hear him fill it with wine, and then the thud of an empty bottle as it hits the floor. Then I hear my mother losing her patience as well.
My fault? Can't you see what your drinking is doing to us in our kingdom? What has happened to the man I married? You're not even fit to be ruler of yourself, let alone a kingdom anymore.
There is a darkness growing in the atmosphere, and I quicken my pace as my thoughts tell me that their argument is about to get out of control. I can't believe they're fighting like this. And the way my father has been behaving lately, anything is liable to happen. I've got to put a stop to this, now has the focus of my mind. My steps can be heard echoing off the walls of the passageway. Then a rather strange thing happens. Although the air has been flowing against my face, all of a sudden I can feel a wind from behind, and the torches catch my attention as I watch them flicker from the breeze. I think to myself how peculiar this is. Then immediately afterwards I hear my father's angry and unstable voice get violent.
You can't talk to me like that, you wrinkled wench. I know about those lines you hide beneath your makeup. How dare you?
I next hear the footsteps advance towards him and the sound of something being lifted off the table in between their thrones.
Give me my cup, wench.
As I round the turn, the picture becomes complete. I see my father charge towards my mother, but as soon as she puts down the goblet of gold, he stops his advance. I let out a sigh of relief. Approaching, I go unnoticed, and father lets out a loud, insane laugh, which turns to a snarl.
Take my cup, would you? I'll teach you.
Fear grips my heart and I freeze. My father suddenly turns, quick and without warning, and with the full force of his backhand he strikes my mother across her face.
No!
I cry out, and watch helplessly as she falls over backwards from the dais, rolling down so many stairs until finally she comes to a rest at my feet at the midway landing. My mother's body appears lifeless. I check and see that she is still breathing. Then, as I rise, my father's eyes meet with mine, and I fill with anger.
Father, how could you?
He looks away and takes a long drink from his golden goblet, then speaks to me with a stern voice.
You'll say nothing of this to anyone, or you will be banished. Liam, is that understood?
I raise my hands with clenched fists and collapse to my knees. And with the back of my fingers before my face, a sudden fear grips me from the seemingly great weight of his unruly countenance. I then peer out over my knuckles and answer my father,
Yes, sire, I understand.
Now go and inform the royal healer that the queen has stumbled and has had a fall on these many steps.
At once, sire.
I take leave, apprehensive to abandon my mother alone with this king. But what choice do I have? I rise up to leave, but oddly enough, a part of me feels like it is being left behind. It causes me to feel awkward, like I am being made incomplete. Then somehow these thoughts come and convince me now about how
I'd get used to the changes around here, and that I was next in line to reign. How, if I was to keep my head, I could make a difference in the future. After all, my turn will come to wear the crown. I'll be all right. Somehow these voices manages to block out what I am really feeling, and so for the time being, I lay it all to rest, not yet realizing its impact, for this is to be my burial, where I'm to be subtly covered over with winds of thought, with lying spirits upon my mind. Buried now I'll be, till I'll be no more. Now hidden within this darkness, which has blinded my sight, a compulsion quickly drives me to finding my way to the healer. Time stands still on this journey. There is an easiness floating in my heart concerning my mother, as I do not want her left in present danger. She must be speedily attended to, for now there's no telling what this king is capable of.
After I arrive,
our family friend, who is seldom moved from his peace, picks up on my anxiety, and after he places some herbs in a pouch, I convince him to come at once. He follows right behind me.